All right. Hello, good morning, and welcome to Raider Nation Radio. It's the morning tailgate here on this Wednesday. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor, we're all in our Las Vegas studios here as we get a lot into, not only we try to pry the rumor away from the truth and try to expose the truth away from rumor. We're going to try to do that here to begin the show. And also, we're going to shed some light on some interesting stuff, especially the new kickoff rule. Really excited to have Sean Syed from Sumer Sports to join us at 7:30. They did a fantastic detailed outline of how the kickoffs looked in the XFL and what that will translate to the NFL. Talk to Sean at 7:30, 8 o'clock, Eddie Borsilli. 9 o'clock, Marcus Johnson from Tape Don't Lie on YouTube. And at 9:45, Street Legal with Ash Watkins, Ash the attorney from Sam & Ash Injury Law. 702-365-9200 is the number. And you can hit us up on X at RNR920AM. Vinny and Clay on your Wednesday. And nothing like I like better than afternoon rumors yesterday and then the beating you over the head this morning when you're trying to watch SportsCenter to catch up on things. And it's just like the Davante Adams. Oh, this trade is a done deal, according to Dan Orlovsky to the Jets. And I think it's time.
And
you've done
he
a lot of
that?
Good.
He said that?
Yeah, he said that.
What did he say? What exactly did
Let's
he say?
See. Well,
I want to hear this.
All right.
Because yesterday was a weird day. I'll explain it here in a second.
It's a weird day. And if you're going to say weird, you got to start with Dan Orlovsky.
It was weird for me because over at the Review Journal, we did our whole marketing thing for our new Vegas Nation coverage and all that. So I was at a photo shoot for a couple of hours yesterday. And so I was away from my phone. Mm-hmm. So I missed some key texts that I was getting from people in the know and all that type of thing about what was, getting ready. It wasn't until I checked my phone and saw, oh, okay. All right. Gotcha. I started writing. But I was like for about 2 hours, I was in the dark. I didn't have my phone with me, which I hate. But anyway, I didn't realize some of the things that were going on and some of the things that were, being relayed to me. And I certainly haven't heard of this.
This is from ESPN's Get Up with Dan Orlovsky and Graney talking about Davante Adams. This is the slug is to the Jets. Is this a realistic possibility?
I think Davante Adams plays for the Jets this season. So the reason why I say that is this. Have you watched Netflix, the receiver?
Yes.
Have you seen it? Have you seen the frustration from Davante Adams? It's not that much better of a situation. One, the only reason it wouldn't happen, Greeny, is if he would feel bad about leaving Antonio Pierce, their new head coach. That's the only reason.
Antonio will be fine. He'll be fine.
Okay, but that the loyalty of a competitor to a coach. One, the Raiders don't matter until they get a quarterback. I don't care what anybody says. So at some point, you got to try to go get a quarterback. Number two, if you're the Jets, why would you not? Cool, it's going to cost you a first. You haven't won a Super Bowl ever, or in like 50-something years or something like that.
Yeah,
you've already gone all in. You have to make this work. If you don't win the Super Bowl, this is going to be one of the more disappointing acquisitions and runs and wasted talent.
Okay, that's enough now.
Well, okay, I'll give Dan some credit.
The quote
here
is, I think this is a done deal. At some point, Davante Adams plays for the Jets
okay.
this season.
So I'll give him a little bit of credit, actually. Not credit, but a little bit of wiggle room here. Because at some point, isn't like right now. Like, there's certainly scenarios out there where, because he did put some context on there. The quarterback situation, he basically implied in his mind, isn't any better than it was last year. Right. And so in his mind, it feels like he feels like there will be similar frustrations expressed by Davante Adams at some point this season. I can't sit here and completely rule out the possibility that, that frustrations don't bubble back up to the top if a similar path to of last season is repeated this year, and Davante gets to a point where he's like, look, I just want to go someplace where mm-hmm. I have a better chance to win. That's a far different thing. That remains a possibility. I mean, we can't
sure.
sit here and say and just completely rule that.
I mean, that is a logical progression of thought.
But
and considering how much Davante Adams is on the books for next year on his current contract,
which is not all of it, is none of that is guaranteed. So his guaranteed money runs out at the end of this year.
Right.
So next year he's yes on the books for 30 some odd million dollars, but my feeling is if he's here with the Raiders, they'll probably work something out with redoing it or something along those lines to give him some guaranteed money and keep, right. But at so we'll get to that point when we get to that point. But so it wouldn't necessarily make that part of his contract not going to be all that prohibitive in terms of trading him or trading for him.
I'm just saying in keeping him, unless it gets renegotiated, $35 million is a lot of money.
So there's no logical
progressions into this. It's something that for the future, not the here and now.
Not right now, and that's why Devontae's agent Frank and Kenny, were so adamant yesterday about forcefully getting the word out that. That's not where his mind is right now, and it hasn't been. That's not where his mind has been with the Raiders for a while now. Now, was there frustration last year? Yes. If certain things didn't happen last year, i.e., a change of direction with Josh McDaniels, moving on from Josh McDaniels to Antonio Pierce, a change of directions, moving to Aiden O'Connell from Jimmy Garoppolo. Who knows how Devontae would be feeling if those moves weren't made? I can't sit here and say that he'd be completely happy right now. And maybe if that had continued on or was still the case, he might be at this point saying trade me. Now, here's the thing though: if you really wanted to get traded, if there were any misgivings right now, which there isn't, he's fully on board with the Raiders right now. So get that out of your mind. But if there were, just to say if there were, he would have already made it very clear. He would have made it clear back in April. He would have made it clear during the offseason in March. Like, look, guys, I love you. I love being here. I love being a Raider, but I got to maximize my future. I don't believe it's going to be here. Can we work something out, with a trade? He would have already made that clear. And people on Twitter are like, he's not going to come out. No, he's not going to come out and demand a trade. I don't think he would need to. I think he would just go to the source, whether it's Mark Davis or Tom Telesco, and say, "Hey, look, this is where I'm at. Can we work something out?" But that would have already been done. Like he's not gonna. Like he didn't wake up yesterday morning and say, "I wanna get traded." It doesn't.
It didn't happen that way.
Yeah.
Because there's also
That's not his mindset.
And if there was a mindset of somebody that wanted to get out, they do it in that portion of the year.
Right.
Okay. Not now. They do it in that portion of the year,
right.
Before the draft. That's when teams have money. That's when the negotiations happen. That's when the sweet spot of negotiations go down. Not in this part of the season, especially with teams. They don't have the return on investment and deals. They don't happen quite often in this portion of the year,
right.
Especially a big blockbuster
now,
trade.
From the Raiders. Now it would be great for the Jets, of course. But from the Raiders' standpoint, what are you able to get? Not that this is all a moot point because this isn't on anybody's radar right now in terms of Devontae and in terms of the Raiders. But to your point, what exactly would the Raiders be able to get right now? And what is that like? Does that future, so he came to the Raiders for a first and a second round pick,
right?
Unless somebody gets. I don't know that he's going to bring back a first round pick this time around if they were to trade him.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I don't know that is the case. He's a few years older. There is the contract to probably rework, and so there's those considerations. But here's the thing. The long story short is, people watched the Netflix series over the last week or so. And they heard him express frustrations that were expressed midway through last season when Josh McDaniels was still the coach and Jimmy Garoppolo was still the starting quarterback, and have taken that to mean that that's still how Devontae Adams is feeling. It's like they're watching something from, almost a year ago and putting it into present terms.
Yeah, thinking it's in real time.
Things have changed.
Yeah,
things have massively changed. Changed, and so that's sometimes the danger of these type of things. I don't know that everybody out there realizes that this is. They didn't just interview him yesterday. Those frustrations were expressed in like September and October of last year. So it isn't often the case where agents have to come out and set the record straight. But that's what Frank and Kenny did yesterday, because they're tired of it. I'm sure Devontae's tired of it, and none of this happens without Devontae saying, "Hey, we need to squash some of this." And by the way, as it was brought up to me yesterday in some various conversations, you know, this whole thing with Aaron Rodgers saying he can't wait for the reunion. Who's to say he doesn't mean with the Raiders next year?
If you want to take things and exaggerate something, yeah,
right.
Why not throw it the other way?
He's a free agent. It would be easier for more seamless for him to just walk away from the Jets right to the Raiders next year. And I would contend to the Raiders, as presently constructed, if you're Aaron Rodgers, you're looking at that situation, going, that's a pretty damn good situation right there with everybody that. Mm-hmm. That's there, and who knows, maybe he'd be willing to take a little bit of a pay cut to come here, you know, for a 1 or 2 year type of a deal. But again, that's all speculation. When you hear guys like Boomer Esiason, kind of not just speculating, but trying to like really forcefully say that, you know, this is going to happen, or make it seem like this is something that is imminent or you know, bubbling. It's just flat out incorrect.
And so it was a chronology of events. Boomer and Gio are on first in New York, WFAN. And then Dan Orlovsky comes and makes a point on Get Up. This is what Boomer had to say to start it all off. And that kind of like started the wick on this little firecracker.
I'm hearing that this is going to happen, if it does happen, somewhere in late August, early September.
Really?
Yeah, and the cap hit for him is $25 million.
Okay.
Why would it take that long?
I'm
not sure about why it would take that long.
Oh, but you're totally sure when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Devontae's never going to come out publicly and say, I want to leave the Raiders. But you do hear in this wide receiver program where he does this, I got to get out of here before I get killed. Mm. I mean, he says that. You know, and that leads you to believe, leads the viewer to believe that he wants out of Oakland. But I don't.
It's also Las Vegas, right, jackass. Yeah. It would lead you to believe, yeah, that maybe he's not happy there. But also, if you continue to watch that, the viewer would also believe in episode 5 and 6 and all that he's happy with the direction of where the team's going.
Right.
You said, what, did you just stop watching the series after episode 3? He has already expressed, if you're willing to go on face value, what Devontae Adams has said in the docuseries Receiver, you would already understand that he's happy with the direction and that he's already gone through OTAs and mini camps. If he wasn't happy, he wouldn't have done any of that.
Well, and the other part of it is, somebody on Twitter yesterday says to me, when are we going to hear from Devontae? He's been awfully quiet. And I was like, what are you talking about? He was on like 1,000 shows last week promoting this show. He's had all sorts of opportunities to, you know, to say, yeah, I'm still kind of feeling that way, or also, he's not the type, I don't think, unless you know, he feels like, you know, there's a button that he has to push eventually where he comes public with it. But I can't stress enough the relationship that Devontae has with the higher ups here with the Raiders, and that started with Dave Ziegler and Josh McDaniels. And if you watched the show, and this gets lost in everything. He had a great relationship with Josh McDaniels, and I always tried to report that and express that. Everybody, you know, ran in all sorts of different directions with it or assumed that they didn't get along. And as Devontae expressed, even after the firing, he goes, I had a great relationship with Josh McDaniels. The problem is when you're being asked to do A, B, and C day after day after day after day, being promised that there's going to be great results from it, and you're not getting those results. In fact, you're getting the opposite results. Eventually, there's going to be a crack in the confidence in what you're asking us to do. That was all that really happened, with the Raiders and Josh McDaniels last year. It wasn't a personality thing. It wasn't a dislike of Josh McDaniels. It was, hey, dude, how you're asking us to do this, what you're asking us to do, just isn't working. And inevitably, from a human nature, you're going to say, man, I'm starting to lose faith in what you're asking me to do. And that's when, you know, problems, you know, start. So it wasn't a dislike or anything like that. It was just a, man, we're not getting the results that you've promised us, and I'm starting to lose faith in what you're asking us to do. So, all that aside, he after the change and after everything from Aiden O'Connell to Antonio Pierce and the direction of the franchise, he's on board. If he wasn't, he has a good enough relationship, like we said, starting with the relationship he had with Dave and Josh, That's continued, obviously, with Antonio and Champ Kelly, and now I think Tom Telesco and Mark Davis, certainly, that if there were any remaining misgivings, if he wanted, you know, to move on, it would be done amicably behind the scenes, and it would have already happened. The Raiders, if he wanted to get traded, the time that would have happened was before in a quarterback rich draft. If Davante Adams is telling you, hey, you know, I really want out, they would have worked something out before the draft so that you get assets to help you in that draft, maybe to move up, you know, to get one of those quarterbacks that you coveted. Now, I mean, at this point anyway, maybe things change, you know, at the trade deadline or closer to the trade deadline or somewhere during the season. We'll have to obviously monitor that. But right now, whatever you get for Davante Adams right now is worthless compared to what he can give you. Like there's a first-round pick next year, a second-round pick, let's say, in 2025. Okay, great. That's something to have, you know, in 2025. But how does that help you right now?
It doesn't help you right now. Yeah. And to think that Boomer would be like, I hear this deal's going to happen in late August, early September. That's even more speculative. I got even more questions like, why is that so specific? Because
he's basically saying
he's going to say, like, all right,
right before the season starts,
Devontae's not happy with the quarterbacks in preseason, and Aaron Rodgers appears to be healthy enough for the rest of the season. These are all coming from one area of the country, New York.
Right.
Okay. It's New York trying to fan the flames for
sure.
Jets fans and New York eyes and New York ears, because it's all slanted to be like, this is all just benefits the most important team in the world, New York Jets.
Right.
You know, this is all about, you know, and it's nothing like, you know, it's just like, it's like everyone else is a minor league team that you're willing to pilfer off of.
Right.
That's all this is. So try not to think like, wow, there's smoke and fire. This is all something leading to something. It's not. This is just two guys running with something, Boomer and then Dan Orlovsky chasing after like cats in a chorus. It's not a reality.
Right. And again, they're basing this on something that was, not that it was so long ago, but the context of it has changed dramatically since he was expressing, you know, those frustrations. And you can tell just sitting up there in the press box watching games that he was frustrated. And why wouldn't he be? You know, if you watched you know, receiver and you went down memory lane a little bit, he took a lot of vicious hits last year. And you know, on top of the losing, he's also getting hurt, you know, and some of those were on Aiden O'Connell, quite frankly. The first one against the Chargers, where he got blasted, was with Aiden O'Connell as a quarterback. And then a few
fractured
others,
his clavicle, man.
Yeah, a few others with Jimmy G. And so, you know, he was getting mad and angry.
But this is also how you tell a story. There's got to be conflict in the middle.
Yeah.
And then there's resolution, you know, and right. That's exactly how Davante Adams' character arc went in this docuseries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. And so I guess the moral of the story is be careful who you're listening to. And you, like you said, it makes all the sense in the world for the Jets. We get that. And there's probably fanboys. Boomer played for the Jets. So I think that, you know, in his heart, he would love to see that happen.
Greeny is a Jets fan.
And that's fine.
And Orlovsky's on Greeny's show.
That's great.
That's what all this
is
about.
But, I mean, you could just say, boy, wouldn't it be great? That makes a lot of sense. We'll have to see where Davante Adams' head is, you know, somewhere into the season. But to characterize this as something that's imminent, that isn't the case. And at least that's been expressed to me vehemently. So I trust those people.
Right. And it's like, okay, so when the trade deadline occurs, you know, again, it's like,
we'll see what's going on.
I mean, but that is down the road. I mean, that's not in our current reality.
I do think, I'll say this, we'll find out pretty soon. Everything's going to play out.
Yeah, you're going to hear what happens during camp, preseason. You're going to see how it goes. You're also going to know how healthy Aaron Rodgers is going to be. All this is all going to play itself out. It all finds a way to the surface.
But it goes back to what I've been saying the whole offseason. This season is going to be predicated on what kind of performance Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew give the Raiders. And that includes a lot of things. It includes wins and losses. It potentially includes Davante Adams' future. There's a lot at stake with the quarterbacks, and the quarterbacks have to stand up and deliver. Otherwise, things can change pretty quickly.
And that is our current reality for the Raiders. But that's not breaking news. We have known that ever since the draft and after free agency. Like, this, these are the guys that they're rolling with, and this is the plan going forward. So everyone's got a chance to either buy in and find out where this leads to. But to just go and be like, wow, I saw it on ESPN, and now it's trending on social media, that doesn't necessarily make it breaking news, because it's been the current reality for the Raiders for at least the last 4 months.
Yeah, and you know, I've learned this lesson time and time and time and time again. As somebody that covers a team, you know, and this goes back to with the Lakers, covering the Lakers, the whatever I've, you know, been a local reporter covering, you just have to sometimes shake your head over the national media. And I don't blame them necessarily. They're covering an entire league.
Yeah.
So they're riding around in helicopters, kind of hovering over, okay, let's go see what's going on in Cincinnati with Joe Burrow or wherever, Minnesota, you know, and that situation, and Justin Jefferson. And they kind of hover over from 10,000 feet above. They don't really necessarily have boots on the ground and have the temperature or the day-to-day, operation. And so some of the things that they say, some of the things that they report, some of the things, their context and perspective is far different than when you're actually covering the team. And I saw this firsthand with the whole relocation thing. There would be stuff that I'd see national reporters that I respected write that I'm like, that is so far off base. I don't even know how you could put your name to that. And it's just, you just sit there and you just, like I said, you kind of sometimes have to shake your head and wonder, like, how? What are you even saying here? But it could get ludicrous at times, but you have to put it all in perspective. These are reports right now coming specifically, as Clay said, from a certain place, and that's New York, by certain reporters who have connections to the Jets and would probably love to see Devontae Adams with the Jets and are talking with their heart rather than their brain.
Let's take a break, and we'll come back with Sumer Sports. Sean Syed, a fantastic analytic, and he's also director of communications. But they took an idea of how the XFL kickoffs, which will somewhat rules, will be implemented in the NFL this year. Everyone's trying to wonder, like, what's it going to look like? They did a great examination of how things, not only in personnel-wise, but in scheme-wise, how it's going to look and how it might look for the NFL come week one. We'll talk to Sean Syed coming up next on Raider Nation Radio.
Back to the Morning Tailgate with Clay and Vinny.
Thanks for coming back here with us on Raider Nation Radio. Text the word FLY, F-L-Y, to 702-365-9200 so you can qualify for our Summer of Fun weekly giveaway, the Mexican Cruise 7 days and nights to Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, Mazatlan. Text the word FLY, F-L-Y, to 702-365-9200, brought to you by Planet Nissan. It's Vinny and Clay here on Raider Nation Radio's The Morning Tailgate. Thank you so much for being with us, and let's get to it here. We'll get back to the thoughts on the rumor mill around Devontae Adams and the Jets and all that. It's humbug. It's bunk. I mean, if you want to continue on with this, we'll answer thoughts here on 702-365-9200. But until then, we've been captivated by what the new kickoff rule could be in the NFL. And Sumer Sports, for a long time, has done such a great job of creating analytics that are totally on the edge that nobody else is using and working them into real-world NFL experiences and coming up with very interesting outcomes. I was just reading some fantastic stuff on Sumer Sports by Sean Syed about the Shanahan offense. And then he doubles down and he comes up with this fantastic chronologization of the new NFL kickoff rules. And he broke down a season of XFL kickoffs to see what we should expect. And we're really happy to have Sean here with us. Sean, good morning to you. And thank you for joining us. When it comes down to this, let's first off start about explaining, how would you tell somebody about the new NFL kickoff rules and the best possible explanation of what we can expect to see? Because then we'll break it down a little bit more to some of the specific findings that you were able to create.
The first thing we have to think about is the image of this whole entire kickoff unit running down the field with the kicker. That's just gone. All those beautiful right. pictures from the Super Bowl where all those cameras are flashing and you get that nice view, that's just gone.
Yes.
Now you're going to see pretty much two people across from each other in close proximity. That run-up is gone, and now it's going to look a little bit more like a run play. So the first thing is, of course, we're going to have to spend 5 less minutes going to the bathroom between touchdowns during game time.
Brutal.
And also the visual look is going to be so different.
Okay, before we get into this, deep into the weeds, please explain to our listeners what the differences are between the XFL rules and what the NFL is going to do, especially with the timing issues in terms of how long you have to wait until you can start attacking as a tackler or moving as a blocker.
Yeah, so one of the big differences is our, like, the NFL, they're going to have a little bit more room to run. The XFL players were backed up just a bit. I'm glad you mentioned that rule in terms of when the play actually starts. That is absolutely
hugely
massive.
Important.
In the XFL, yeah, when the ball was kicked into what's called the landing zone, which is between the goal line and the 20-yard line on the receiving side, the play either started when the ball hit a player, or the ball, if it hit the ground, there was 3 seconds mm-hmm. that had to go by before the play started. Where in the NFL, the ball is going to be live the second that it hits the ground. So in the XFL, there was a rule specifically there to stop teams from just kind of kicking the ball short into the landing zone and getting their guys a running start, where the NFL doesn't have that. And I think that special teams coordinators are going to think about that and really form their kickoff strategies around that specific rule change.
I can only imagine, like, were XFL players going 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi? Who is in charge of the 3 seconds?
Yeah, that was funny. Funny on my end watching. I'm sure it was a hassle to players because the ball would land. And, of course, you've been playing football your entire
right.
life. You're going to sprint down as fast as you can. So there were a bunch of offside penalties that happened. So I guess, you know, maybe the NFL guys get a little lucked out where they don't have that. But I think that it's going to mean a little bit tougher job for returners this year.
It's Sean Syed here with us from SummerSports.com. I'll repost his findings, his story, up at Clay Baker Radio on X so you can follow along here. This is fantastic stuff, because what you also tried to do is, like, all right, in order to study the kickoffs, you wanted to see, like, all right, what is the most successful strategy from the kicking team's perspective? And you kind of first started out breaking down the field in 5 different zones. Explain how, you know, just kind of having that on-field visual cue to where the ball was going to be kicked most of the time and what were the outcomes of where they were returned.
So the way that I cut it out was basically with landmarks on the field. So you have the sideline to the numbers, pretty much the numbers to the hash, and then you have between the hashes and then the same thing kind of going on the other side. And when I started it, I thought I would come away thinking, okay, I'm going to find out exactly where kickers are having the best time kicking the ball to. And the most kickoff did happen kind of in that middle area, but the results were kind of similar. So they were within kind of a yard and a half between where the ball was spotted after the return was done. So I was first kind of disappointed when I saw that, because I would have loved to have this golden answer. But then to me, it makes it feel like, okay, maybe we can think about using a position player as a kicker, because if where we kick the ball on the horizontal level matters a little bit less, then you can kind of dive into different strategies.
I don't think you're going to get any argument from NFL kickers if the if teams choose to use a non-kicker as the kicker on the kickoffs. I really don't, and I've I say that pretty confidently talking to some people, because their job is to kick field goals. Their job isn't to go put themselves in harm's way with tackles. And in the XFL's version of it, how many times did you catch kickers having to engage in tackles with their kickoff roles?
It was 14 times where a kicker was the primary tackler on a play, but that doesn't include all of the missed tackles, all the times that they looked really silly, all the broken tackles, or they're just kind of general influence on the play. So from a rule standpoint, the kicker can't cross the 50-yard line until the ball is live. So you can't just kick the ball in the sky and have your fastest guy run down there and make the play. That would be kind of silly. But I think that the kicker should absolutely, of course, 100% agree with you. Those guys are there to hit those big field goals. You want Carlson hitting that big field goal late in the game. But kickers that are going to be able to become experts at kind of like a knuckleball, low line drive, I think it's really going to be able to make a difference if they can bounce the ball kind of around the 20-yard line. That I've seen videos of a kicker doing it. It's bouncing around. It's really hard to field. If you can pin a team back at the 10-yard line starting their drive, or even maybe even force a turnover just based on how fast your kick return coverage players are going, I think that makes a big difference for teams too.
Well, I like where you're going with that because, as you noted, regardless how some teams, even the Chiefs, are like, well, let's try some other non-kickers to try to kick the ball because we don't want our kickers getting hurt. But you noted, like, the skill level for the NFL kicker is considerably different for the XFL because you're going to have certain guys that are able to, like you said, provide this knuckleball-type ability to kick the ball into certain zones, have it drop, have it bounce. Next thing you know, you're getting the advantage as a kicking team. And it's more than just blocking. It's about placement of the ball. So keep your normal kickers there because they're the really skill player in this portion of special teams. And at that point, you started to notice that sometimes there are other guys that are on this team that are just as important on the kickoffs. And I'm wondering about the kind of blocking schemes you're able to chart because it makes me feel that when rosters are getting sorted out, there are certain players that are going to be needed for special teams, but for this particular type of kickoff rules where certain players are going to have to be required to be great blockers, but there's also certain schemes about the 10th man. Explain the 10th man in the landing zones.
So in the XFL rules, you had to have 10 players up on that kind of what's called the restraining line on the receiving side. So everyone's in a row. But in the NFL, you can have two returners back. So I consider 9 players kind of in that area right next to the line, one returner back. And this 10th player, you can have them up on the line. It can look like an XFL kick. I think that a lot of teams, especially if they see knuckleball kicks, they're just going to have two returners spread out because it's just so important to field that ball and try to get positive yards, especially if the bounce is kind of weird. And then, you know, you can use that 10th player as a lead blocker. I think it would be really fun if we saw some teams kind of make it like a little bit of a rugby play and let's get kind of an option pitch in there. I do think teams will be maybe a little bit hesitant to do that, of course, just because there is so much risk. But it feels like that's kind of the NFL's response. The XFL tested this rule over junior colleges across the country. And I think they came to that 3-second rule before the ball is live for a reason. And then having two returners gives the NFL players maybe a little bit better time if the ball is kind of wobbling all different directions.
One thing I was really fascinated by watching the Raiders in mini camps and OTAs was some of the line play that was occurring from the blocker standpoint. And it was literally like watching sometimes a run play where you'd have players pulling, you know, to one side of the field as a lead blocker, kind of like you would see in a run play. Was there anything creative that you saw in terms of the blocking schemes of those players up front?
I think a run play is the best way to look at it, and that's really how the special teams coordinators in the XFL treated it, where exactly you had players blocking down one way and then an inside guy pulling out, or an outside guy kind of trap blocking where they're kind of running down the line back inside towards the play. And there was some trick plays. There was a reverse here. There was a throwback where a guy's throwing the ball back across the field. It feels like those sorts of trick plays probably less often, but I think we're going to see, you know, return players like X blocking where they're crossing over so you can find a different way to create some angles. And then in the NFL rules, of the players that are on the line, two of them can actually be off the kind of that line where everyone else is going to be within a 5-yard range back. So that actually gives players more flexibility, where in the XFL, everyone has to be on that same line.
We're speaking with Sean Syed from Sumer Sports. We retweeted out that story, so you can check it out for yourself if you haven't seen it already from Sumer Sports. Sean, you also made a distinction of personnel on kickoffs. You noticed that, all right, some teams tried offensive linemen as blockers, but they weren't fast enough to really execute the blocks in space. So you also noticed a trend of smaller, faster players at certain positions. Do you find that trend may also find its way into the NFL?
You know, in the NFL, there's always such a premium placed on athleticism, and I think that that is for good reason, and particularly on the kickoff, where if you have someone where, you know, maybe they're just not the best route runner or they're just not the best blocker, if they can hone these specific skills, I think it would be a positive. And if I was to pick just one position across all the different positions to play every single spot, I think it might be running back just because from a blocking standpoint, it's kind of like you're picking up a linebacker on a blitz where you're in this kind of awkward shuffle and you're trying to kind of establish a stance there. And from a kickoff coverage perspective, you really have to do your best to make the person across from you miss with one move and really kind of get back on your lane. So I do think it opens up the opportunity where, you know, in the NFL, we hear all about running backs maybe being valued a little bit less. And the same thing is true on defense, where, like, the safety free agency market is kind of depleted in some ways. But those kind of body types, I think, are going to be able to have success. Of course, it's still going to be able to come down to, can you do this kind of specific block? Are you able to make a player miss in a specific way and execute those techniques?
All right, so I'm not normally the prediction guy, but I'm going to make a little bit of a prediction here. I think at least, you know, people that I'm talking to and watching it kind of unfold during, you know, the portion of the of practices that we saw in minicamp and OTAs, it feels like this is going to lean more heavily in favor of the return team. That's just my gut feeling right now. And I feel like kickoff teams are going to be resigned to that at some point, to some level, and just start saying, you know what, we're just going to kick it out of the end zone and take our chances with the other team getting the ball at the 30-yard line, which then will force the NFL to rethink. Remember, the first proposal was to have the ball put at the 35 on touchbacks. They said, no, that's a little bit too prohibitive, so let's just move it to the 30. Do you anticipate or could you see a scenario where kickoff teams are just saying, you know what, we're just going to kick it out of the end zone. It's the 30-yard line, and that sucks, but it's better off than the returns that we're giving up. And maybe the NFL going right back into it and saying, well, if you're going to do that, then we're for sure going to vote to put it out at the 35 rather than the 30.
You know, I certainly hope that doesn't happen because I spent a lot of time watching these 407 kickoffs, and it'd be a little bit less fun for me, I will tell you that. But I have to think there's going to be some teams that come to that conclusion.
Right.
Particularly if they have a really, really big like kicker, and you know, maybe you don't spend all the time on that, or maybe you just don't have enough practice time to do that. But I think that there is enough value in learning that specific kick, and I really just believe in these kickers. I think that they're so good, and really, it just took me watching one of these guys kick a knuckleball and me just like falling in love with the idea of seeing it, because
right.
there is a difference in the chance that a team can score if you're starting at your 20-yard line versus your 30-yard line. Every yard there matters so much. And I think that, you know, the kickoff players are going to be moving so, so fast, where in the XFL, we only saw one touchdown in 2023. So it feels like, you know, maybe we don't get as many big returns. So I lean personally towards the kicking side. Maybe I'm giving those guys a little bit too much credit, but I could definitely see a team, and particularly in the preseason where people don't want to show exactly what they're doing. I'm really interested to see where everyone lands kind of maybe around like the fourth week of the season as we get into October.
In that regard, and Sean, we'll end on this, how much of an increase in scoring do you find that this will work on? Because you've noted very clearly each yard added onto the start of a drive increases the chance to score points.
Yeah, if you think about it, for every kickoff, for every game, for every week over the course of the season, there's such a compounding effect for the whole entire league for where points can go. And really, like, every yard, you know, between, say, you're starting the ball at the 25 or the 35, you know, there is in that 5 to 10% increase in just the score kind of happening. And you know, that could sound small, but again, like, there are so many possessions over a season. And if you can create an effect where now, hey, your team has, say, a 20% chance less to score on a drive, to me, you know, in a game that is so, so on the edge, particularly, you know, for a team like the Raiders that, you know, they're in a division with the reigning Super Bowl champions, you have to be able to do something to get an edge. And if the NFL is going to hand you a rule that maybe you can do it, to me, you at least have to try.
I love it. Sean, thank you so much for coming on today and continued great work. We're absolutely big fans of what you're doing and everyone over there at Sumer Sports. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Sean Syed at SumerSports.com. Fantastic information. And as he noted, that teams that have good special teams and good kickers, they're going to take advantage of this. They're the ones that are going to be on the forefront. For the Raiders, you could probably say this is an elite special teams group that they've had for at least the last 3 years.
Yeah, it is. And but the risk, that is one part that I wonder about. And teams, and we saw everybody getting an opportunity really to try to kick it off during practices during the offseason. So they're definitely open to the possibility of using somebody who's not named Daniel Carlson as the kicker in order to protect him, because kickers could very well figure prominently in the tackling aspect, and you just don't want Daniel Carlson. Imagine losing Daniel Carlson in the first quarter and not having anyone to be able to kick PATs or field goals. That would be a really bad loss during the course of a game. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But the scheming, the execution of it, finding somebody that can put the ball on the ground in a way that bounces and delays a player actually, you know, getting possession of it, which allows your tacklers to go run down there and close the gap, so to speak. So, you know, all of that's going to play into it. There's going to be a lot of confusion to start off with. There's going to be a feeling out process. And I agree. I think that it's not going to be till the fourth or fifth week of the season until this thing kind of settles in and we see some of the trends and what direction teams are taking. But without question, your special teams coach now becomes really even more valuable. Mm-hmm. They always have been. Mm-hmm. And finding the right type of players, whether it's the blockers or the coverage players, finding the right body types, the right speed, the right mentalities in terms of being effective blockers and effective, tacklers or coverage guys is going to be, pronounced as well. Because I don't know that offensive linemen are going to figure that, big in it. They don't normally anyway in kickoff return or kickoff coverage. But who is it? Is it going to be? Are they going to be safety profiles, linebacker profiles, wide receiver,
running back profiles?
Yeah. Yeah. So we always get, like we were talking about the other day, we always get sort of fixated on the actual return person, but there's 10 other people on the field in front of them, and 10 others aside from the kicker in the coverage aspect of it that are just as important as that return guy. It's going to be great for any team to be able to come up with a dynamic returner. But the blocking and the tackling is just as important.
And don't be surprised as teams have to go and round out their roster, not unlike the Raiders. Those who are towards the back end of roster filling, you got to imagine that they're going to play an integral part in kickoffs.
Yeah, and they always have been.
They always have been, but you're going to get names that wouldn't be your normal guys that you would normally be keeping,
right?
Because they have now a specialized need on these on special teams.
Correct, and it's just going to make it even more, even more pronounced. Unless, as I honestly wonder, are teams going to just give up and say we'd rather go ahead and take it?
I could totally see that. Yeah. I could see where some teams are like, we are at a disadvantage here, no matter what we try.
Right.
We are just going to take an L on some of these and take the ball to 30.
Yeah, and if you look at the analytics of it all, there really is a huge difference between in starting points. If you start, drives at the 20 compared to the 25 or the 30, your chances of scoring points grow exponentially the further up. I mean, it's obviously common sense, but it's not insignificant. Like, it's significant enough where you really want to make sure they don't get to a certain point on the field, because once they do, even the 30 yard line is a big advantage for a starting point for an offense. The chance to score points goes way up compared to starting at the 25 or even the 20.
It's fantastic information. Go check it out. We retweeted it up at Clay Baker Radio, the Sumer Sports article with Sean Syed. We will take a break and we will come back with thoughts from Eddie Borsilli here on Raider Nation Radio, but not before I give you a chance to win some tickets to go see the Vegas Summer League. I got 4 tickets to go see the NBA Summer League at the Thomas & Mack and Cox Pavilion. Comes just once a year, but these tickets are good for any day until July 22nd. So be caller number 9 right now at 702-365-9200. 4 tickets for any day of the Vegas Summer League. You can take the family and have an amazing day out, because you can watch all the games in both venues, the Thomas & Mack and Cox Pavilion. No matter what is there, on the day you go, you got carte blanche for all those games. Be caller 9 at 702-365-9200 for your Vegas Summer League tickets.